Edition here on WEAA 88.9. I'm Sean Yoes, your host. Thank you for joining us for our first of 2 hours on this Thursday. Coming up in the second hour of the show is the infamous, the notorious NWA Sports Report. All the usual suspects. We're talking NFL news, NFL, NBA news. Gilbert Arenas, what a jackass. Disparaging the great and beautiful Lupita Nyong'o. Don't understand him, but the boy ain't never been too bright. So we'll get into all of that in the second hour of the show. But in the first hour, we continue our conversation, series of conversations about violence and homicide with an eye on solutions. We have a full crew in the studio. Before I introduce them, I want to tell you this. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at First Edition 88.9, and don't forget to like and follow us on Facebook at First Edition on WEAA 88.9 FM. Go to WEAA.org on our homepage for the latest podcast of First Edition, or subscribe to our iTunes podcast, First Edition. Also, hit me up on my personal Twitter account. The tag is at Sean Yoes. That is my name, S-E-A-N-Y-O-E-S. Or go to my Facebook page if you have information, insight, or breaking news you want to share with me. I'll share it with the people unless you don't want me to, and of course, I won't do it. Again, as I mentioned or alluded to a moment ago, in the studio with me is two of the organizers of the Baltimore Ceasefire Movement. It's coming up quick, August 4th through the 6th, 72 hours without violence, without homicide in our city. That is our prayer. In the studio with me are Ellen G. She is the director of the Evolution of Perspective, one of the coordinators for the Baltimore Ceasefire. Ellen G, good to see you as always.
Sean.
Thank you for the T-shirt.
Yes, he got his shirt show.
Can y'all, one of y'all have your, one of your, everybody's live streaming or whatever you're all doing. somebody get me with my.
We're going to get you with the shirt.
I would have put it on if I had the right shoes.
Right, because you got to be coordinated.
You turned the cop, there you go.
I don't know, let me get it together though.
That's cute though, right? With the orange
Oreo orange. Mm-hmm. So you know I'm rocking that.
That's
so
Sean's shirt.
That's mine, XL. Thank y'all, appreciate it.
Erica Bridgeport. I started to bring your shirt out the car, but I was like, I don't know what size he wears.
XL, always okay. XL. Erica Bridgeport is also here. She is director of training for Community Mediation Maryland, also one of the coordinators of the Baltimore Ceasefire. E Wonder, good to see you.
Hey, Sean.
Hey.
You look cute with all your green on.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Nicole Mundell is in the studio as well. She is executive director of Out for Justice. Nicole, welcome back.
Thank you.
And in the studio also is Anita Phillips. She is the first lady of the Kingdom Life Church. She is also a mental health counselor, and she's working with this Baltimore Ceasefire movement. Anita, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Good to see you. Where do we begin? It's just a week left, first
Count
of all.
Countdown to the crown.
To the crown, for real. The momentum continues to build. As a matter of fact, in the studio when I came in, I saw another organization, you know, calling for the same type of thing. Baltimore, we must unify under one common goal. Stop the killing, stop the violence.
Yeah. Oh, is this Saturday's meeting?
Connections.
I think it's the Nation of Islam.
That's the Nation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We'll be there.
That's exactly what it is.
Yep. All right. Stop
We're asking
the beef
everybody
hotline.
To come. And so Ellen G is going to go and speak about the ceasefire.
Well, what,
Brother Andrew Muhammad what, asked for it.
Well, bless them, for real. Awesome. But what is interesting here is at the bottom of this flyer, it's a Stop the Beef hotline. There's a phone number, 443-629-7594. And one of the thoughts that I had before we got on the air this evening was the work that you do, Erica, in mediation. We've talked on and off mic about the need to expand that work or the ability for people to have access to it.
Mm-hmm.
it would be extraordinary if during this Baltimore ceasefire weekend, there was an opportunity, if in real time, people were going through it, to be able to come somewhere where they can, you know, I mean, I don't know if that's even, if it's plausible, but it would sure be a great thing.
You know what's really interesting about that is in the, like, literally the very first day I was having conversations with people about it, that was a piece of the idea at first, was that, like, was there some kind of way to coordinate having mediators, like, on standby if people were saying there's a beef I really want to resolve, like, right now. Mm-hmm. The challenge with that is, you know, as a small nonprofit, the amount of volunteer mediators that they would have ready that day, right? And enough confidential spaces, you know, to be on call, enough spaces. Yeah, so it would have been a whole nother nightmare. Whole nother way to do it. But that's one of the reasons that it was important to us to make sure that we were having meetings at the Community Mediation Center, that people got to know about what that was, because you can't talk about being able to resolve conflict in a healthy, peaceful way and not give people a way to do that.
Of course.
So
let's talk about the momentum that we've seen. I mean, I'm so thankful, and I know y'all are 10 times as thankful and grateful as I am, but I'm just so happy that this has resonated with so many people across the city, not just across the city, but across, I mean, internationally.
The world. Mm-hmm. It really is.
Yeah, because everybody's watching Baltimore. We had 200, and so they want to see if we can do this.
No, exactly true. And everybody's been watching us since April of 2015, quite frankly.
Yeah.
And again, this is a response to what is going on in our city, and it is our response. It's not a governmental mandated response.
That's right. And I think that is why the world caught on, because Baltimore residents did so much work pushing this message forward and connecting with one another and connecting people to resources and doing the outreach, that it made the media come to us. So other than the Afro and First Edition with Sean Yost, who was out day one,
amen, son,
amen.
Everybody else were not checking for us. They just were like, okay, that's cute. We'll see y'all after the ceasefire. Maybe there's a story in it somewhere there. And so we just had to go, okay, Baltimore, let's get it. We got flyers. We got posters. Y'all want them? And people said, we do. And they, you know, and everybody got involved. And so it became a thing you could not ignore, because Baltimore said, we are doing this, whether there are cameras there or a media story about it or not. And so the media suddenly went, what's this thing I'm seeing everywhere?
Yeah, that's... From my perspective, obviously, you know, there's a lot of irony in that.
Exactly.
And it's actually laughable to me. But I don't know how you can – I don't know. I mean, maybe it is just because I'm from West Baltimore and grew up around Mondawmin or whatever it is. I don't know. But y'all said it – what did you say?
Yeah, how can you not?
Exactly. That's the whole point. Yeah. I mean, as soon as you said it, I was like, yo – every week we're going to get out.
Right.
Because it's like, this is us.
Yeah.
This is us. This isn't about ego and about who did what first and who's in charge and all of that stuff. We gotta be our brothers and sisters keepers. I mean, that's simple.
So I think part of the reason for the hesitance to support and the cynicism, not specifically behind this thing, but in people in general, is because you have people in leadership who get caught up in like scandals and all that other kind of stuff. People who they put themselves out there and they build these bigger, larger than life personas, and they have all of these things and they build loyalty, and the community gets behind them. And then they do something and then the thing falls apart.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people are like, you know, I might want to get behind it, but like, who are these people? And like, what are these people doing? And are they really about the work? Because I've been burned before. I didn't follow 6 or 7 organizations that got my money taken. Like, so there's a part of me that understands, like, the look. I don't understand people calling it stupid. I understand people, like, looking and saying, like, well, wait a minute, let me see whether or not they real. Because you know,
you gotta wait to see.
Let me see. Like, that's a natural reaction mm-hmm. when you've been burnt so many times by people who let their ego spin their movements out of control.
We're gonna. I want to also let you know that we're gonna be joined by Baltimore City Councilman Chris Burnett. At 5:30. He is LNG's councilman.
He sure is.
Is that your councilman?
That's my councilman, okay. Girl.
He good.
He's real good.
He wrote an opinion piece in the Afro this week talking about solutions to violence as well. So we'll check in with Councilman Burnett at the 5:30 mark. Anita, I want to bring you into the conversation because
superhero, Kingdom Life Church.
Oh my goodness, she's an advocate.
Yes, but, came in with the thunder.
And so the question really is, I know you've heard the criticism of the church community, of the religious community generally, I would say, but the church community in specifically about closing off, you mm-hmm. know, kind of dealing with the internal affairs of the church and the people in the church as opposed to having a broader outreach. I mean, it is a criticism I've heard when I was in leadership in my former church, and I know that you've heard that same criticism. From your perspective, Sister Phillips, I mean, how do we begin to engage in a more plausible way the church community in Baltimore City, because it's such a powerful mechanism. Sure. It's such a powerful apparatus and infrastructure for change. Mm-hmm. And for progress in our city. But how do we make that, how do we get that moving?
I think having opportunities like this that are just so wide open for individual worshipers to get involved, right? Mm. So it may not be an entire church,
okay.
but just individual worshipers. A very large percentage of city church attendants don't live in the city.
Truth.
And I think that has a lot to do with the disengagement. And this is true in large cities around the country. So Black people, their church membership is generational. If your grandmother went there, your mother went there, that's your church. So even if they move, they still drive in for church, but they go back home and have gotten very involved in their lives at home. And so I think it has resulted in us becoming kind of disconnected from what's going on in the city because such large percentages of the church attenders don't live in the city. Mm-hmm. And so, but we worship here. We love here. So there needs to be a re-engagement. And this was just the perfect opportunity because of the ego-free movement that just said, do whatever you want to do. So when I first emailed Erica and said, can our church get involved? She was like, yes, you don't need permission. You don't need to sign up. And anytime you take ego out of it, there are many more degrees of freedom, right? To use a math term.
Ego, easing
when
God
ego
out.
Goes out, right?
Easing God out, E-G-O. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So for us, it was just a matter of realizing that, look, blood is being spilled all over the place. The turning point for me was Tanjay Chadwick. Tanjay Chadwick's story. She's a 20-year-old woman who was killed earlier this year, and her boyfriend was arrested for it. And when I saw her on the news, it was just something struck me. There's always that one that just struck me so deeply. I couldn't shake her. And it turned out they found her body in Daisy Park, which is literally on the edge of our church's property. It almost felt like her spirit must have been... How many times must I have been driving by and I just could not recover? I didn't want to recover. But we're involved in a lot, and I think a lot of churches are involved in their local community, and we're very involved on a kind of a macro level with education, advocacy. We do a lot of work with that. But I want to get my hands right here on the street, and I didn't know how to do it. And so when this came up, it was like, that's it. We're moving, and I want my whole church to come with me.
You are very supportive. I know with Out for Justice and our contribution to the ceasefire movement, which is to address the fact that folks are angry, right? Mm-hmm. And so we're like, what are they angry about? What are they frustrated about? Oh, they have open criminal cases. Mm-hmm. Oh, they have open warrants. They have civil cases going on where they're being sued by something, or, you know, they're dealing with some child support issues, right? So people are, like, upset and frustrated about some things.
Mm-hmm.
And we just decided, like, okay, well, let's figure out a way to bring some attorneys in who have some, you know, criminal expertise, some attorneys who have some civil expertise, who have some expertise in child support. Mm-hmm. I know today a guy just reached out and was like, oh, you know what, I do Social Security benefits. And we're like, oh, we need that, because you have a lot of seasoned women in communities and men who that is the income of the family.
Right.
And those, for me, individuals coming home from prison depend on them.
Sure.
And so let's figure out a way to provide them some education about their Social Security benefits or their SSI benefits, or do they need to file an appeal? So we just was like, let's figure out a way, and then attaching it to healthcare professionals. Mm-hmm. Because most folks in our neighborhood, they don't want to walk into a clinic and like, right. I'm frustrated.
Right.
I'm feeling some kind of way today. Mm-hmm. I need to talk to somebody. Mm-hmm. And with fear that they'll be, you know, stigmatized.
Right.
Right.
So if we bring mental health professionals, counselors, right, mm-hmm. right there in the community, and during a very untraditional time, because mm-hmm. it's from 5 p.m. to 5 a.m.
Right.
You know, so that was like, I was honored that you came on Facebook and you were like, hey, I know I have some attorneys and some counselors right. in my church.
We have multiple yeah. mental health professionals in our church, yeah. right? So
right.
you said the call is there. We can answer. Mm-hmm. I think it's just a matter yeah. like of being ego-free. I'm so excited mm-hmm. about what, yeah. what you're doing because right. the mental health piece is everything. Mm-hmm. There's so much trauma recovery mm-hmm. that needs to happen. Mm-hmm. If we don't do that.
Yep. And Nadira Smith, one of the women of Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle, connected me to Wynn.
Nice.
And like they've reached out and they want to offer yes. some professionals to come. And so.
But that's,
oh, that's just so exciting that people would. Oh my
God. That is the most, and in a lot of ways, that is one of the most important things that is going to happen after the ceasefire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
sorry, that we, you,
now
you
these
all,
relationships are right. built.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
You have crafted, you've crafted an infrastructure
mm-hmm. right.
that can be utilized and tapped into way after August
yes.
6th,
yes.
One that hopefully will be of great service to so many in our city for years, hopefully, maybe decades to come.
Yeah,
yep. yeah, yeah.
Because there's an opportunity to grow it and to fortify it.
Yeah.
I think the most important work that we do typically comes out of organic scenarios.
Yes.
And this yeah. was an organic scenario.
It really was. Mm-hmm.
I mean, literally, Erica, your son had said to you, this is what's happening. Baltimore's about to set a record. After mm-hmm. you fussed them out or fussed at the people, then you said, well, I guess it's time to do something.
It's time
right?
to do something.
Yeah. yeah.
And it really was. So Ellen G and I were talking about the other day how, like this, a big part of how this happened came out of death and murder, right? Because
yeah.
in real life, Ogun and I only met because Ooh passed away.
Right.
Like, that's how that happens, because both of us were hurting about Ooh. They were so close. I had only met him like a year previously. And then, and Ooh had been involved in 300. I met him before then, but we got a lot closer doing that work together. And so that's why Easy was there, because Ooh was there. And Ogun was there, because, you know, his whole team was there.
Right.
And so when Ooh transitioned, there was this hole of like, okay, we got to step into really yeah. doing a lot of the stuff that Ooh was doing, like yeah. for his team. Yeah. You know, it can't just be we behind him being like, oh, yeah, yeah, what he said. Like, mm-hmm. what kind of activist am I? Mm-hmm. You know, is the decision that they had to make. And so Ogun went to a few people saying, hey, I got an idea. Hey, I'm thinking about doing a ceasefire. And nobody connected with him. And when he said it to me, I was like, all right, let's talk about it. But then we both got busy.
Yeah.
And in real life, because I was so heavily, like what I'm doing right now with the ceasefire is how it was about 300 at that time.
Right.
And so I don't even know if I would have had the mental and emotional capacity and wherewithal to do both at that time, mm-hmm. for real. And so I knew, okay, call him because he wanted to do that, you know? And so I knew to be able to have people that you met out of pain, even because the city is in pain because there's murder all around. And I really feel blessed and privileged in real life. Like, I know that everybody does not have people in their life that they know. Like, we have the meeting one day, and the next day I jump in five people's inbox that I know going to be about it. They're going to do what they say they're going to do. They're going to push it out. They're going to keep their egos out of it. They're going to ride all together. And the six of us have not been, we wouldn't have been able to do this by ourselves.
Right.
But we had to decide, we gotta, if these are our values of this effort, that it really is about people, we had to keep handing it back to the people. They kept
right.
trying their best
they
to
did.
Be like,
what you want us to
what
do?
What y'all want us to do?
What
is it okay if we do this? Is it okay? And every single time we would be like, nope. it's your ceasefire. Mm-hmm. Whatever you want to do is what you're going to do. And so eventually people like understood that and got that. And so
it forced them to really fully buy into it.
And people are not used to people really meaning it when they say it's yours.
Yeah. Right.
People say it's yours and then they try to micromanage how you do it. And so I understand that I have been involved, like the kind of work I've been doing, I understood how to organize in a way that was inclusive because that's the model of mediation that I work in, right? So I understood how to really include everybody, how to listen to everybody's thoughts, how to hand it back to people. I had learned enough through other movements what to do and what not to do and how to organize things so that we knew, oh, and there needs to be a calendar everybody can see. And the Facebook page has to be like this. Ogun knew the flyer has to look like a party flyer or nobody's going to look at it. You know what I mean? Like that everybody had pieces. Ellen G says anything and everybody's like, oh, Ellen G said it, so we better be doing it. You know what I'm saying? And so it just so happened that like we were able, I could have not known anybody, right? But I had to go through whatever in years. They had to go through whatever in their lives for all of us to be ready at the right time to be this particular organizing squad. Because I'm telling you, if one person on this squad was different, this whole thing could have went another kind of way.
Right. Yep. And that's the attractive part about it. Because my boy, President Kern, kept coming to me. And I got all these things I'm doing at Alpha Justice. Like I'm organizing a reentry event that happens every year where we advertise the good work of returning citizens. And Karen's like, Nicole, we got to meet with Ellen. And she kept saying, Ellen G, Ellen and Erica, Ellen and Erica. And I'm like, like, we got to meet with these powerful black women, you know, this, this, this. And I'm like, all right, Karen, you going to give me another, like, thing to do, you know? And we finally met up with Ellen G. And it was like, okay, here's what we want to do. She was like, okay, do what you
want to
do.
Mm-hmm.
So
a 4-hour
that's the attractive
conversation.
Part about
it. We sat and we talked and bonded and went to my neighborhood afterwards, did a walkthrough in the neighborhood. And they were, and my thing is to make sure, so for example, for like Anita, the resources that you have, the manpower that you have, the people power that you have at your church, we didn't have that. Like, we know people, but we don't know people who have the thing that you have. And Nicole and Karen, like, y'all have a level of access to, like, legislation and that whole world that we don't have. We don't know anything about it. And so we're able to power up and build something and continue to build and build.
And we are going to continue to build after the break. We're going to, see what I did? See what I did? We're going to take a couple of phone calls, and then we're also going to check in with Baltimore City Councilman Christopher Burnett. Stay tuned. You're listening to First Edition. We're talking Baltimore Ceasefire. Welcome back to First Edition here on WEAA 88.9. I am Sean Yose. I'm in the studio talking about the Baltimore ceasefire happening August 4th to the 6th. Next weekend, it begins August 4th through the 6th. 72 hours without violence, without homicide. That is our prayer. In the studio with me are Erica Bridgeford and Ellen G. They are two of the organizers of the Baltimore ceasefire. Also in the studio is Nicole Mundell, Executive Director of Out for Justice. And Sister Anita Phillips, First Lady of Kingdom Life Church, is also in the studio as well. We're going to check in with Baltimore City Councilman Chris Burnett in a moment. But first, let's take a couple of phone calls. Let's go to Brother Leo Burroughs in Bolton Hill. Brother Burroughs, you're on First Edition. How you doing?
Good evening, Sean Yost, and good evening to the ladies who are leading and spearheading ceasefire.
Good evening, Brother Burroughs.
Praise God. Everybody who's doing it, we praise you, we love you, thank you for your organizational efforts and your courage. Let me just say very quickly that many of the black churches, and I heard you allude to black churches earlier, have a problem, or their members have had a problem in terms of class distinctions. And that is to say, they many of these black churches, not all, but many, thought that they had upper-class people who did not want to associate with poor black people. That's and as a consequence, they did not prioritize Pan-Africanism and unity. And the fact that you're doing ceasefire is forcing us to look back at our responsibility totally and collectively as a people to address the violence and concerns and the institutional racism and all the things that we face. So again, I commend you. Keep in mind, many of these folks moved to Woodlawn and Randallstown and Columbia primarily to get away from poor black, and now they're going to be forced, I think, as a result of your initiative, to give back and to do more. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Brother
Thank
Bros.
You.
I mean, it's a fair criticism. Yes. It applies to some
it
people,
is fair.
But at the same time, we're not going to paint with a broad brush,
right.
And we're thankful that there are other people who don't feel that way. Let's take another phone call. Let's go to Professor Doug Colbert of the University of Maryland. Professor Colbert, welcome back to the show, sir.
Hey, Professor Colbert.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Sean. Hello, Nicole. And I want to congratulate every one of you because you're waking up a lot of people in our city. Joining you next week. So I just want to give a shout out to all the lawyers who are listening to this program. We need you to be volunteering to do a four-hour shift next weekend. And if you have any issues at all, you can reach me or you can reach any, you can certainly reach Nicole, but I'm over at Maryland Law School and we really need more people to be stepping up on this thing. And I just think it's so important because there are people in the community who, like Nicole was saying, they have warrants where they can't walk the streets without fear of arrest. And they have other court obligations that they really don't have legal representation for. So we're going to bring out some lawyers, give some information, try to help people get on a good path to this whole thing. And I just think what you're all doing is just absolutely wonderful.
Thank you so much.
University of Maryland Law Professor Doug Colbert. Doug, we appreciate you, man. Thank you. Now let's go to Baltimore City Councilman Christopher Burnett. Councilman Burnett, welcome back to First Edition, brother. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you for having me, as always.
Of course.
Hey, Chris.
Hey,
Councilman.
We have one of your constituents in the studio, LNG, is sitting next to me, Chris, as well. So, you know, watch your piece and keep.
She does awesome work, and we definitely, I'm definitely glad to have her.
That's my friend.
In the district.
Of course,
Especially having someone that, you know, does great work all across the city. I'm very thankful for that.
Chris, we're thankful for your opinion piece that you wrote this week. Well done. What prompted you to actually come forward and want to do that and publish it in the Afro newspaper?
I think the Afro is an institution that has existed in the city for a very long time and has served a vital role, especially within the black community, to publicize amazing things that are happening within our community. But also has been on the forefront of, you know, of the news that goes across the city. And it's a great paper. And I wanted to make sure that, you know, as we continue to talk about violence in the city, that it's a very difficult topic. It's a very one that, you know, weighs heavily on me as we continue to climb the charts of lives lost every year in Baltimore. We had a very tense hearing this week around mandatory minimum sentencing, and even in that hearing, I made sure I acknowledged to the families that were there that were expressing the heartbreak of losing a member of their family, a son, a daughter, a nephew, a grandchild to violence. That, you know, that is a very difficult thing to come forward and do and to say publicly,
mm-hmm.
and share your hurt in front of the world. Because the world is literally watching us right now.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to put that out there that, you know, this is and that's why I opened the piece in acknowledging that we are in a crisis. Because I think so much of this debate around what to do about the violence has kind of, it seems to be a line drawn around, you know, not the folks who are not for mandatory minimums, folks have been kind of framing us as not caring about violence or not being sympathetic to the loss of folks to violence, and that's just not true. And so I wanted to make sure that was clear to everyone that, you know, I have experienced violence. I lost a friend just last year to violence. But it still doesn't mean that I have to agree to a piece of legislation that would lock more people up. And in my perspective would lead to more violence moving forward.
Absolutely, it would.
And so, but also there's been a lot of dialogue around, well, what other solutions are there? So I wanted to make sure that I put together a piece, while it's brief and certainly willing to elaborate as we move forward through this year and several years, but to put out there that there are alternatives to incarceration. And a lot of those are rooted in health or rooted in movements like Ceasefire, that it's about changing culture, the culture of violence that we have in the city, about spreading love throughout the city, involvement, mentorship. I mean, these are not things that will change our situation overnight, but we have to, as folks, proponents of the bill saying we have to start somewhere, I agree, we have to start somewhere. And I think it's starting with Operation Baltimore Ceasefire. It's starting with, you know, expanding funding for Safe Streets and other community-led and community-focused programs, and investing in recreation and housing. I mean, these are complex issues, but violence is a complex problem.
Absolutely.
And I think all of us are looking for a quick fix or a silver bullet, and there just isn't one.
Right.
But for a long time, and this is what I've been trying to express to folks, that folks can continue to say, well, with the things that you're talking about are long-term fixes, we need something now. And I'm like, well, we haven't done these things. There's never been a now moment in the last 20 to 30 years that we've, as a legislative body or as a city, have made putting forth comprehensive solutions the primary focus of everything we do in government. And so at some point, we have to make that the focus. And my argument is that that focus can start right now. It can start today. It can start at our next council meeting on the 14th as we continue to put in new legislation.
Because we have seen the long-term effects of mandatory sentencing and locking people up. Like, we've done that, and this is now 10 years later, and we see, you know, right?
Yeah.
So we've seen the long-term effects of that. We have not seen the long-term effects of treating violence like a public health issue, which it is.
Exactly.
Councilman Burnett, let me ask you this, though. You know, you and several of your colleagues made it clear. You were very succinct during that very contentious hearing earlier this week, that mandatory minimums don't work. And there's empirical evidence that demonstrate that they do not work. But it was from the very beginning when this mandatory minimum bill was trotted out several days ago. It seemed very clear, at least from the perspective of a lot of people that I interviewed on this show and that I talked to privately, that this was a knee-jerk reaction from government because we were in this crisis of violence, because we were edging towards 200 homicides before August.
There's a lot of people up
and knee-jerk reactions, especially in scenarios like this, are always bad. The question I have, Councilman, is how do we, as a city, and how do you all, as a governing body of the city, stay away from, abstain from, those types of kind of wrong-headed decisions as far as policy is concerned, because it was disturbing to witness it at its incipience.
Yeah, I mean, and it caught me off guard. I mean, I first learned of the bill being put forth Thursday night, the Thursday before it was introduced on Monday. And so I would say the starting point is a lot more collaboration between members of the council, the mayor's office, the police commissioner, because it seems to be, you know, it's a very limited conversation that occurred. If I'm finding out about something, you know, literally less than a week before it's going to be introduced and has to support it without really having an opportunity to express concerns, ideas around how we could do something a little bit different before having to do so publicly. And so I would say that's the starting point, is more strategic planning on our part before putting forth anything that could have such a large and ranging impact. And I'd say we've to some degree started that. We had a hearing yesterday with the Education Committee led by Councilman Cohen, and the whole point of that hearing was to begin to have a strategic vision for how, as a body, as a committee, we work on education issues. And that's a very small committee, But I felt it was a step in the right direction that we are finally, okay, sitting here. Do we continue to react to things that are happening to us? Mm-hmm. You know, we had a $130 million budget shortfall. We had kids not able to get back on the bus. I mean, I felt like we were valiant and, like, reacting very quickly and swiftly to those challenges. But at the end of the day, like, the city, we're doing the city a disservice if we can continue to react to problems and not necessarily spend time strategically planning for the future. And being a lot more strategic about how we, you know, the policies that we put forth, the impact that they'll have. And that was really my critique of this bill, was that we, you know, as legislators, we have to do our due diligence and research how the anything we put forth will have an impact. I've been very slow at rolling out bills, and that's been primarily because I've had conversations. I had an idea and ran it through folks who are experts, and in a few of those instances, I pulled back the bill because it didn't make any sense. It wasn't going to work. But I didn't put forth and then, you know, and then try and throw something on the wall and see it with a stick by just dropping, doing something just to do it. And I think that's been, you know, that's been the piece that we've had, you know, the critique of this bill was that, like, there's a lot of pressure for us to do something. And from my perspective, I agree, we should do something, but what we do, we have to be more strategic about.
I think my question is, has there ever been a legislative session where lawmakers are taking time to repeal some laws? Like, there are a lot of unjust policies on the book. I don't know if that has ever happened, where the legislative session is repealing and dealing with some of those mistakes that have been made in the past, but that's unrelated.
That was Nicole Mundell.
Yeah, and that was one of the amendments put forth, was to sunset this after seeing if it actually worked or not. It didn't make it through committee, but that was something that Councilwoman Clark put together. But to your point about repealing, I can't speak to I've only been on the council for a little while.
You don't have to.
So not in my time, but I can tell you that 25 cities across the country have repealed mandatory minimums in the last 10 years because they've seen that they don't work. So I can't speak for the city of Baltimore specifically, but I can tell you that that is something that happens nationwide, as we learn from those mistakes. And with this bill, my concern was that we should learn from the mistakes of others and not repeat those mistakes as a way to kind of do, like I said, folding to the pressure to do something.
But Councilman, so this bill, because it has been amended, basically has been neutralized by state law, correct?
Yes.
So is it effectively dead, or what is the situation?
We will see. I mean, it comes up for a final vote on August 14th, which is our next scheduled full council meeting.
What time is that meet? What time is that?
5 p.m. at City Hall.
Okay.
Will be when it moves on the second reader. It can be amended. It requires a higher threshold to amend a bill on second reader. So I think it won't change much if it does passes. But it could be pulled. I don't know. It's not my bill, so I'm not really sure what the plan is moving forward. But to your point, Sean, you know, it is mimicking what we already have on the books. And let's be clear, like, I do think we do need to do something about the violence, and there's definitely a small number of individuals that are committing acts of violence and terrorizing communities. Like, you know, I'm not blind to that fact. You know, I live in, and it's funny because a lady came up to me at the end of the hearing and said, well, you must not live anywhere where this is happening. And I said, I live in Edmondson Village.
What you talking about?
Don't do my life like that.
We have the same, you know, 4th of July. I'm wondering if it's gunshots or anybody else in the city. Like, and, you know, I'm not removed from it. I just don't agree. And I think, you know, there's, like I said, but she was looking for something, and I think we're all looking for something, and it's heartbreaking because there is a sense of urgency that we need to have. And what I would say to your point, Sean, about state law is that these things are already on the book.
Right.
We have to actually make arrests, which we've seen are down in the city. We have to actually build solid cases against the guys who are actually pulling out guns and killing people, and deliver effective trials. I mean, there's no easy fix to this, and I think we're all looking for that, but it just doesn't exist. But more does need to be done, and I think we have to continue to swim upstream and get to the root causes of violence.
Absolutely.
And that's where I want to have the conversation. Right, I want to get to the root of it. And not to ignore what's going on right outside. I had a gentleman say to me, what you're talking about is reaching kids. And I said, exactly, because they're the next generation, right? They are the kids who are now 15. If we continue to go on these tracks, they're going to be 18, 19, and looking having finished school or not finished school. Maybe they're hustling, maybe they're not. But we need to catch them now and put them in a positive track now so that 4 to 5 years from now, we're not in the same boat looking for the same answers, talking about mandatory minimums or anything else. Right. Like, we have to continue to swim upstream, get to the root causes, figure out what is actually driving the violence, and not to give up to anybody that is an adult now and is in the game. But, like, we also have to reach forward to our young people as well and reach out to them and help put them on a different path, because we're seeing, and to the point raised earlier, we've tried locking everybody up.
Right.
These are now the children of the adults that we locked up. These are the young men now. These are that had a house without a father, because we locked someone up for drinking the beer anything else that was done under zero tolerance, like clearing corners and making folks sit in the jail for a year, year and a half before they get a trial.
Then they became unemployable.
Unemployable. They don't have a house, falling behind on child support. I mean, there's a lot of advocates in that studio that know these issues better than I do. And are in Annapolis every year trying to fight. And I commend all of y'all for that work, because it truly is. To move the city forward, we definitely have to have all hands on deck. And everybody trying to play a role. And I'll say this, you know, for a lot of folks trying to figure out what they can do, whether it's supporting ceasefire or mentoring or anything, everybody can do something, right? We're all trying to figure out, if I can't be at all the mentorship programs, and I'm not going to be at none of them, or if I can't do the ceasefire this weekend, then I'm never going to talk to anybody about not pulling out a gun. No, you can do it on the weekend after that.
Weekend. You can do it on the same weekend.
You can do it that weekend. You can do it the day before.
You can do it today. You can do it this evening. You can do it tonight.
Please, Jesus.
Baltimore City Councilman Chris Burnett represents the 8th District of Baltimore City. Councilman Burnett, thank you, man. We appreciate your time, as always, Chris.
Thank you.
All right. We got a few more phone calls. LNG, go ahead.
I just wanted, because I know that she's probably listening. Mommy, I love you, and thank you for coming to see me today.
Amen to that.
Your mother.
My mommy.
Girl, my mother.
Wow.
Let's go to Brother D. Chase on the phone
D. Chase,
you there, man?
Yes, sir, beloved.
What's up, brother? How you feel?
Oh, man, spirit is absolutely super fantabulous. It's just an amazing time in Baltimore, you know?
Yes, sir.
It's an amazing time in Baltimore, so I'm just glad to be a cog in the wheel, you know?
Yeah. Yes, he is.
Absolutely. I mean, y'all got you and Finney have some things going on as well coming up right around the same time. I wrote about it in the Afro. I hope you got your Afro this week, brother.
I actually subscribe to the Afro.
Yeah, so amen, brother. Amen, brother.
That's
amen,
what
brother.
Talking about.
Yes, sir. Hey, yes, sir. I mean, the bottom line is, man, is that, you know, we all are uniting for the good. You know, last year around this time, there was a game happening in New York City. It was the TBT, the basketball tournament, 64-team single elimination, where the winner receives $2 million. And there was a Baltimore team that was in the semifinals, a team by the name of City of Gods. City of Gods, Terrence Frazier, Idris Bashari, Joe Connolly, part of a historic basketball family here, Tay, Omar. All those guys, all Baltimore guys, competing for this money. Game is up. They up 17, literally 17 points. And all of a sudden, it falls apart. Mm. They wind up losing, and of course, they don't get a chance to get the money. But in that, I looked around, and I saw an opportunity. I saw a half-empty stadium. I saw a great basketball game. But I did not see the level of connectivity from New York City. The game itself was great, but the personality around it was lacking.
Wow.
And in that, I saw an opportunity. So I was pointed out the owners of the TBT, John Moger and Diane Friel. I was shown those guys, and they said, those are the owners right there. I said, yeah, you know, I'm a Baltimore guy. I'm Park Heights all day. One thing I know is I know how to rob somebody, you know, unfortunately. All right?
and then run real quick with it.
Real quick. So, you know, I come out there, I catch him. Yeah, I catch him slipping. They, you know, game, excited.
But, and the bottom line is, y'all, we got it here now, brother. So it ain't never going back to New York.
Come on now.
Because
Baltimore will support some basketball games on a hot, sunny day outside. So, yeah.
Oh, we just lost Derek. I don't know. But bottom line is
we
do have
August
the tournament.
August 2nd, too, they have a day of service where things are happening all over the city.
Read your paper. Read your afro, because it's all in the afro. the basketball tournament, $2 million tournament, 64 teams. The semifinals and the finals are going to be here at Coppin State University.
Okay.
D-Chase and LaRon Finney have been instrumental in bringing that together. The face of that thing is Carmelo Anthony. But
Mr. Juan Dixon is
D
the coach.
And LaRon, of Coppin State University, and Dee and LaRon have brought this thing together, and it's an amazing thing. It's not just a basketball tournament. It's a day of service, jobs, cleaning neighborhoods, and all of that.
Yeah.
So we've got, as I said, we are building tremendous momentum going forward into August, Erica Bridgeford.
Yes.
And so many different people are a part of these different efforts, and a part of the goal, obviously, is to improve the quality of life in our city. That's the bottom line.
And I think listen to Chris talk about it being a knee-jerk reaction, and you saying, right, there's never going to be a good thing, right? It made me think about like that. So for us, this was a reaction too, but it was a heart jerk reaction. You know, like it was the
Take heart jerk over knee jerk.
And that's the difference. A knee jerk reaction is going to be adversarial and violent and aggressive, right? A heart jerk reaction, I felt that same feeling like, no, we got to, what is this? But from a heart space, it was like, how can we pull everybody together?
Right.
How can we be celebrating life?
Right.
How can we? And I don't think we thought I thought people were going to be having cookouts all over the cookouts and block parties all over the city. That's what I thought. I am just amazed at what people are doing.
Yeah.
How create when they really understood? No, for real, do what you want to do. They went, oh well, dang.
How can I contribute?
I'm gonna stay out all night then. I'm
gonna bring some lawyers. I'm
gonna bring some lawyers, and I'm gonna. Well, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah. You pray all over the city.
The way you advertise it was a way to
celebrate life.
Celebrate life.
Like life affirming. And some people were like, "What's a life affirming activity?" And LNG kept saying, "What." Ever make sense to you? and then people were like, okay, well, all right. And then they figured it out. And so from a heart space, you allow your heart to be jerked out of your chest, you have no choice but for it to be connected to all the hearts around you who are also hurting and looking for a way. And so people tapped into our unlimited potential as beings on this earth.
Yeah.
You know, we took the peace challenge and said, what will they say about us when it was our time to be here? What will they say we did? And I'm just so grateful, you know, to just have had the mind to say out loud, don't y'all want to do this? And they went, yeah, we was thinking that. You know, like, it's unbelievable.
And shout out to all the other, like, anti-violent movements that's been happening.
Yes.
You know, consistently.
Because these are all the people.
Because they're the people who helped build up this momentum. Like, oh, well, we know what
they
this
were like,
looks
oh,
like.
We know how to do that. Yep. Yeah, yes.
They are the people who have prevented Baltimore from going over 500 every year.
And every time.
Like, if we're going to be real about that, like, they are the ones when people say, they're the ones that people who say, ain't nobody doing nothing. They're the ones that they're talking about.
Right. Because if everybody stopped doing what they were doing, we would find out how much has been helping.
Well, that is a profound observation,
sure,
because the reality is, as bad as it seems
it
in our city, it could be significantly
it really
worse.
Could. Every time people are like, what if the ceasefire doesn't work? I was like, are you crazy? Like, have you seen what's happening? It's been working. All of the people who are participating in the ceasefire are people who they're on the front line every
day.
These aren't, it's a lot of people who are happy to have something to do, so they jumping into this. But the people who are like pushing this thing for real forward, these are people who do this work every day and don't let it numb them that bodies keep dropping while right. they are trying to stop right. it from happening. They keep waking up every morning going, and what else can I do? And what else can I do? So this is just one more thing everybody gets to do together.
And I think what you just said is so powerful about them not letting themselves become numb to the yep. work, because I think that's what, I know that's what part of what moved me, and I think yeah. it's what's moving people, is how dare I become numb?
Right.
Mm. How dare I become hopeless?
Mm. Right.
How dare I throw up my hands? Mm. How dare I, you right. know, and then go work on some safe level. Let right. me go work on a system. Let me go work on some safe level. But right. to take the chance
right.
to get down here and say, don't kill anybody.
Yeah. Right.
And with the risk that maybe yep. they will, but
anyway.
People don't right. like to take yeah. risks. Yeah. And right. how dare we
and they don't like to be
detract
uncomfortable.
Ourselves from that. Right. Take ourselves from
but
that.
That's, right.
so many
but that's,
we don't have
like,
the right
oh,
to
but
do
it's
that.
When we are uncomfortable that we find that's out who we really are that's and what we are actually about.
Exactly. Exactly.
But that's I mean, it. That's at the core. That's at the core of what love is all about.
Is
right.
the
is the willingness to be that type of vulnerable, have that
right.
type of vulnerability.
Absolutely.
Because it is a vulnerable space to reach out to somebody in such a basic way
right.
and say, "Don't do this," knowing that you could be rejected.
Yeah, exactly.
And that it could not work.
Yeah, right. exactly.
But ultimately, yeah. that's what that type of that's what that yeah. sacrifice is all about.
Yeah, but and what's beautiful is even when people have laughed in our faces, oh.
Hi, Faraji.
Hi, Faraji.
I love Faraji.
I know, right?
He's coming up
just
a little later.
Real quick, even when people have been skeptical and laughed, like, in our faces,
yeah.
they say, but keep trying, shorty.
Right.
Somebody should be doing so. I don't think it's going to work. Good luck with it, but don't stop doing what right. y'all doing.
And they put the post up in their window.
Right. And they right. still put, and they slide the flyer in their pocket, and it dawned on me that they get undressed that night and empty their pockets, and what do they see? They take this message about nobody killing anybody into their sleep.
The yeah. Baltimore ceasefire is August 4th through the 6th, 72 hours without violence, 72 hours without murder. That is our prayer. We're going to come back one more time next Thursday before
yes.
it starts.
Oh, my goodness. We're trying to get the whole squad in this joint
I
next
hope
year.
So. I hope yeah. so. We'll make room. Erica
yes.
Bridgeford, LNG are two of the coordinators for the Baltimore ceasefire. Sisters, thank you both.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you, Sean.
Nicole Mundell is executive director for Out for Justice. Thank you, Nicole, for coming through as well.
Thank you.
And
pleasure.
Sister Anita Phillips, First Lady of Kingdom Life Church. Thank you for coming through as well, sis. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, NWA Sports Report in full effect. Stay tuned. You're listening to First Edition.